welcome to another episode of Awards Daily TV's Watercooler Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Moser, and I'm here with a special interview with two actors from PBS's airing of the National Theater production of Shakespeare's classic Romeo and Juliet, Josh O'Connor and Jesse Buckley. Both Buckley and O'Connor have good chances of getting nominated for Emmys for Fargo and The Crown, respectively, this year, but they are also in contention for their work on this retooling of one of the most beloved love stories of all time. Director Simon Godwin strips down the text and staging of this version to streamline the love story in a new and exciting way while retaining the passion of this tale as old as time. The biggest challenge for Buckley and O'Connor came in creating the intimacy of Romeo and Juliet in the middle of a global pandemic. The two stars talk about the restrictions of building that love and the immediacy of Shakespeare's text. You can hear how much these two love one another in our chat, so the work on stage was definitely easy to capture. Hope you enjoy.
Hi, Jesse.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Hi.
Hey, mate. Oh, I miss you.
What's going on? Are things working?
All right. Yeah, you just sounded pretty far away for a second, but now you sound right.
All right. Hi.
Hey. Oh, I bloody missed you.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm gonna catch up. This is a professional meeting.
Yes. It's very, very
nothing. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Super professional. Yes. Hello. So I was just telling Josh that my husband was just finishing The Crown, and then I just finished Fargo. So I sort of get, I got all of Josh O'Connor, I got all of Jesse Buckley all going on right now. So, and I have to say, not to be giant nerds about you guys, but I'm big fans of both of yours. So thank you so much for taking the time with me.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah. So I guess first question I want to talk about Romeo and Juliet. I saw a headline, I think it was a review, I think it was the New York Times, where after I watched it, I checked out the review of it, and the headline was Romeo and Juliet cut in half and twice as good. And I was sort of wondering if there was anything that you particularly missed about Romeo and Juliet.
Oh my God, so much.
So much.
Yeah, I mean, like, making it was, I miss making it with my best friend and had an amazing team of people. We had, like, the time of our lives. So I miss, like, I miss that. And, but do you mean, like, about the story or the characters or the experience? Or
either or, experience or even, like, the original text.
I don't know about, like, I don't know what you think, Jesse. I sort of feel like whenever I finish a project, it always feels like the right time to finish the project. So in a weird way, like, it's sort of, and then it's like, oh, okay, great. That's like, we've told that story and that feels really, that felt complete. I guess the one thing that felt incomplete about Romeo and Juliet, because the experience was so full and so full of love and joy and brilliance, the only thing that you felt slightly shortchanged on, I guess, was that we never got to do it to a live audience. And, you know, I think we're searching, Jesse and I are searching to find something else to do that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the experience itself, I obviously miss, but yeah, it was great. It was lovely.
Yeah, I do feel like this version, it was, because I mean, I have done Romeo and Juliet myself.
Who are you?
In a very interesting production in high school, I was Mercutio, probably just because I was, you know, overly dramatic, and
it's a big criteria for Mercutios to have high drama constantly.
High drama, and I was just very loud, so I feel like that probably fit me. I guess I wanted to ask both of you, you know, I sort of love this version because you can sort of see how it is a play and how it is a film. I sort of love how that is like mashed together. And I was curious what it was like to have a camera in such an intimate, like, you know, space, because, you know, the camera capture is very small details, but it also is very much clearly a theatrical sort of thing. So I was sort of wondering what it was kind of like to have a camera in such like an intimate space as you're doing this, because I thought that was a really cool thing.
Well, I guess like creating anything requires you to be intimate, you know, mm-hmm. and like the theater is kind of the most intense relationship of a mutual creation between an audience and the actors in a moment. And so like, yeah, I guess when we were kind of looking at doing it as a film instead of a play because of the pandemic, we wanted to kind of incorporate the intimacy of creation and the creation of love being the kind of vessel of that in Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. It was like quite a kind of unique experience, because the first time these two titans of like storytelling, the film world and the theater world, were coming together to create something totally unique to the moment that we were in. And you know, stage managers had never really worked with script supervisors before, or mm-hmm. lighting department had never had so much kind of access to such an incredible like lighting team, or you know, everything was within, you know, there in the National, and yet we were limited to what we were only really in one space, so we were forced to be physically intimate in a way.
Okay,
I agree with that.
Okay.
Thank you, Josh. Dead silence. I have no idea what I'm
saying. Yeah.
Well, I kind of also wanted to ask about the space, because the space itself is so unique. I love how there are moments where we get to sort of, see backstage, and we get to sort of, you know, see the skeleton of the space that you're in. I guess I wanted to also ask what it was sort of like to play around in that. Is that something you guys had a lot of discussions with, of like where you were going to do it? Just because I like how, you know, even banging on like a certain wall or anything would create a completely different sound and would establish the space in a completely different way. So what was it sort of like to work in, a space that has sort of like an industrial quality, when the love story is so delicate? Talk to me a little bit about that.
It's really interesting, actually. In the process of a normal or kind of your normal film, mm-hmm. you in pre-production, you obviously do the kind of location scouting, and you'd find spaces that, or the filmmaker would find a space that feels appropriate for whatever moment in that film. Obviously, we didn't, you know, that when it came to location scouting, it was like, we're in the building, and it's it's over there, or it's like it's over here, or it's just over there again. And so it was about using this one space and in different ways. And it's kind of there's sort of four different rooms, and it's mm-hmm. that's essentially the Littleton stage, and then backstage, so behind that, and then behind to the right, there's another space where they keep a lot of the set and some of the equipment. And then to the left of the stage, there's another section. So it's sort of like these four like squares, essentially. But because Simon and Simon Godwin, our director, and Sutra, our designer, are from the theatre world, mm-hmm. side of this kind of collaboration, it was, you know, our process was rehearsal. And so, we were rehearsing these scenes, and then I'm sure there were conversations going on about where these scenes might be set. Actually, once we got there, it was just like, well, you know, let's just fit these scenes into this space. And that's not to say there wasn't a thought there. I think there was thought, but I think the exciting thing was that we didn't have time to like overly think like, what is the impact of this space? There were like, mm-hmm. I remember there was like, I don't know if you remember this, Jesse, but there was like, I remember there was a big question about for Romeo, when he gets sent away and he's banished, there was this thing of like, how do you banish someone from a space into another bit of that space? Like, how do you show travel, or how do you show being pushed out of a very familiar space? Because we spend our whole time in this story, on the same stage. And I don't, I actually don't remember the answer. I mean, the answer is what happened, but I don't know what came to that decision. But I guess it's, yeah, it's really interesting. It's not what I'm saying, I guess, is that it wasn't not thought through. I just think it through quite kind of off the cuff and slightly quickly, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But also, I guess, like, to be honest, you know, all you don't need anything when you're in a theater, like, I think Peter Brook or what, all you need is a chair and a black box and really just the relationships. And I think some of the most powerful scenes in it is where it's just being lit a certain way and there's very little prop or anything, like the set is kind of barren and in a way it encourages us all to lean into the story and the relationship and not worry about, you know, the world can be whatever you want it to be. And that's the magic of theatre, is that it's not like prescriptive. It's often quite, there's a journey between the audience and the stage where they're making up their own mind about what this world means.
Yeah.
Well, I also feel like the, you know, if the actors who are doing it on stage, if they believe it, they sort of transmit that to the audience. So even if you were on a bare stage, if this was like Romeo and Juliet with no setting and it was just you guys on a blank stage, you guys would be able to sell that because
And a lot of the choices that we made were based on that, like the scene that breaks off from their first meeting where you see Romeo and Juliet in the rehearsal room.
Mm-hmm. I love
that. You know, that was just as it was when we were in a rehearsal room where there was a stage manager in the corner and, you know, it could have been anything, you know, we could have been anywhere. And that felt really exciting. You know, it was a really, it kind of focused it in a way, you know, there wasn't a need to put flourishment around it because it's just about relationships, the play, really.
Okay. Jesse, I wanted to ask you particularly about, you know, Juliet and her mother in this, because I mean, I love Tamsin. I think she's incredible. Anytime I did not know she was in it, and I got super excited when she was she popped up as Lady Capulet. I got like a sort of, I thought maybe like Juliet might be scared of her mother. I got, you know, her like steely presence was something that I feel like I've never seen done in that way before. And I love how she gets to have, you know, the big scene towards the end of the show, you know, is she not proud, not proud you have, but thankful that you have. That's one of my favorite parts of the play. And I was sort of wondering if you could tell me what it was like to sort of explore her relationship with her mother, because she scared the crap out of me in this. And I love that you guys had to have that scene together. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, Tamsin, first and foremost, is just the most beautiful person and an incredible, incredible actress. So it's just like easy to kind of, it's easy when you're given that amount. It was really exciting when Simon decided to turn that into the kind of a matriarchal role. Yeah. And I guess something that felt kind of interesting early on was actually in this world, it's so hard to let yourself love somebody because the reality is, because we're in a world of death in lots of ways, is the reality is that you will have to, you might lose somebody. So love became a quite feared thing. And it was kind of interesting because we were in a moment in a pandemic where to hug somebody was like incredibly terrifying. And I know for us when we were rehearsing it, like that was a very big reality to, you know, to touch somebody without having a negative test, and the idea that you might, you know, was really like within the room. So that kind of offered itself to the relationship. And I guess for Juliet, the thing that I find it, there's such an incredibly powerful relationship between them, but it's something that's so hard to be physical with each other. You know, there's almost too much love that it's that it turns to something kind of like lead. And Juliet, you know, Lady Capulet in this, she's a woman of a patriarchy who's catacombed herself in a system because it's safer that way and she can actually maintain herself. Mm-hmm. But when Juliet said, you know, in that moment, there, I felt like in that scene where Are You Not Proud? I felt like it was almost like Juliet was trying to crack her, being like, we're the same. Like, you can love differently. You can live differently. Like, don't sell me off. We're not trophies. Like, we're beings. We want to love and be passionate and be alive. And even if that means dying, let's do it. Like, but she's so far down the line that that's hard. But I found it heartbreaking because it was impossible to reach her because she'd been kind of shrouded by a system which encouraged her to hate instead of love.
Sort of going back to what you were saying about, you know, doing it in the pandemic, there's sort of that, I was very reminded of that eagerness of young love and, you know, the sort of way that first love is very uninhibited. And the whole time I was watching and I kept thinking of the pandemic and, like, you know, you mentioning about, you know, touching one another and, you know, sort of embracing that, I imagine had to be sort of difficult with all the circumstances of the crazy world sort of looming over us for the last.
Yeah, it was like there were sort of, I think this is right, two moments we got tested a week. Like, certainly in rehearsals, it was harder, where we basically got tested twice a week. And there was this like 4-hour window where basically, so you get your results back. And if, you know, obviously if you were negative, then we could touch each other for like the rest of that day.
Yeah.
We'd have these super like kind of exciting rehearsals where we're doing all these like beautiful love scenes, but unable to be near each other. And suddenly and like grabbing each other. And then, but also like, it was, what was so funny is, and I remember Jesse kind of picking up on this quite early on. It's like, you know, like you get a rehearsal room full of actors and we all want to touch each other all the time. So there was this kind of hilarious, there was this sort of hilarious thing. I remember the first fight rehearsal we had with all the boys. Mm-hmm. And of course, Jesse and I had kind of, we'd have these little rehearsals where we were able to touch and it was very exciting and able to tell the story more clearly and whatever. But I remember this fight rehearsal and all the boys turning up for this fight rehearsal. And we could only do the fight rehearsal in that window because obviously fighting get close. And they came in, they're like, you're all negative. And all the boys, we all came in and it was just like a hugging fest. It was like kissing each other and hugging each other. Exciting thing. And I absolutely loved it. But I think, and on a kind of more serious note, as Jesse sort of alluded to, it's like it charges that story, this sense you know, like not being able to be together. You know, Romeo and Juliet, one of the things we discovered quite early on is like, Romeo and Juliet don't have many scenes together. Like,
right.
They're rarely together in this play. And so those moments of like physical contact are so charged. And I think it was kind of appropriate that in this time of not being able to touch, those moments of touch are so vital and exciting and hot. And yeah, anyway, I'm sort of rambling, but yeah, you see what I mean.
Ramble away. That's fine. I couldn't imagine, you know, being in a rehearsal space and not being allowed to touch. Cause that's like the, you know, very, you know, actors have a lot of trust for one another and, you know, being that close and that intimate to help build something, especially something like this, where, you know, telling such a story about love and like the fever pitch of love and what it does to you. I can imagine that would be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
I sort of want to ask just like a general question about Shakespeare, if I may.
Oh, yeah.
I've always really loved Shakespeare. Like, anytime there's a different adaptation, like, I'm there, whether it be classic, modern, you know, make it a modern dance with no lines, and I understand the story through movement. I sort of wanted to ask, like, what do you guys respond to with Shakespeare? Obviously, you don't need a silly American telling you how timeless and wonderful Shakespeare is, but I wondered what it personally meant to the both of you.
Jesse?
I was going to say Josh. What does it personally... Oh, God. It's...
I always feel like Shakespeare's stuff is just so lush, and so not even just like the language, like the emotions are just so... That's why I personally always like am so eager to see any sort of new adaptation or a new work, just because it's so fiery and lively. So
I mean, it's gigantic, like, yeah. And I don't know if there's any other writer in the world who's been able to do what he did and transcend more like eras, you know, and mm-hmm. for it still to be like any time I start, you know, do a Shakespeare or read a Shakespeare, I feel like it's the first time I've ever read it, you know, or and for what. And he can say something so huge in something so small and make it like I don't think there's many geniuses in our that have ever existed, but he is a genius. I don't know how he has done what he's done to make it to make humanity so huge and beautiful and raw and personable and for that to live throughout time. I don't think there will be a time when it won't live. That's what's so incredible.
Yeah. I think it's kind of it what's so appropriate and what I suppose why, you know, and this is obviously not by design, but you know, why it's so beautifully kind of fell into place with the pandemic is that like in any kind of human struggle or in any kind of philosophical question, you can kind of pretty much go back to a Shakespeare play and you can find an answer or you can find a sort of a theory behind it. It's the ultimate discovery of humanity and what it means to be human and live on this planet, yeah. Interact with people. And so, you know, you have like the love plays and like Romeo and Juliet is the epitome of what love means and what it means to commit life. But it's also about, it's entirely about conflict and peace and reconciliation and...
Politics.
And it's like, yeah. And I think what's, you know, I remember like there's a beautiful speech in Richard II, which I was like very fortunate to do it, like weirdly do that speech as Prince Charles in the Crown, which is very strange. But yeah. In the speech, I remember reading it and being like holy shit, there is always an answer to like whenever there's a struggle, like with anything, there's an answer hidden somewhere in a Shakespeare play. And in the Richard II speech, there's this moment where, so Richard II is pleading and he's like, you know, he's basically saying, I'm exactly the same as you. I feel want, I taste grief, I need friends. And it was like this really simple line. I think it's sometimes we get lost because of course the language is so flowery and beautiful. Sometimes we get lost in the little moments and there's plenty in Romeo and Juliet of little lines where it's just like, it's just straight up. And it's just like, and that line was so powerful where it's, I need friends. And it always kind of struck me that whenever you're in a struggle or like, you know, with life or trying to understand life, there's something will ping out at you from a Shakespeare play. And so I think like for Jesse and I being able to tell this story in a time where people are struggling to find love and people are struggling to find touch, which we've alluded to, but like there's so much in Romeo and Juliet that felt so removed from in this time. And I suppose that's why it's important. That's why Shakespeare's like has such a kind of power, and we that's why we all, I guess, go back to it.
Yeah,
I'll be your friend, Josh.
Cheers, mate. Because
I hear what you're saying here. Josh needs friends.
That's
all I need.
There's a subtext to everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to look like a right loner.
No, yeah. You're not. You've got loads of friends.
Loads of mates, honestly.
I should make the headline of this piece, Josh O'Connor needs friends.